This is Rafflebix After Hours.
One 18 Rack Addicts podcast, hours after the show. Hello, welcome. Words in the wrong order. I hope that spiced up your morning, afternoon, evening, or whenever you decided to listen. Of course, it's that time again. Ben is here, Pete is there, and we're in your ears to deliver music technology and maybe science and other newsworthy somethings that you may or may not be interested in. But thank you, as always, for turning up. We must start with Pete's week. What have you been doing?
Well, now that we're in a, dare I say, a post-COVID world.
Brave.
Well, obviously COVID's still a thing, but generally on the whole, it seems to be relatively post-COVID in the respect
Indeed.
Of how people are conducting themselves, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
I have been a-travelling, and I believe for the first time in possibly 2 years, I've actually, not abroad,
but somewhere.
But
where
somewhere.
Were you?
I was in Darkest Hampshire. So I spent the weekend in Stockbridge.
I don't know it. Tell me more.
It's a small Hampshire town, and as I discovered, it was not only the centre for thatched cottages in Hampshire, it seemed to be a hell of a lot of them.
But also thatched cottage fires, maybe, I don't know.
With the person I was travelling with, I was discussing that there is a substantial fire risk with having a thatched cottage, and also the fire brigade won't enter the actual building if it's burning. If you have a thatched roof, they'll wait till it burns completely and collapses before even attempt to do anything.
Know.
Because it's deemed not safe, because they are so risky to the firefighters' lives going in, so they don't. They just
The more you know.
Wait for it all to kind of burn itself out. Anyways, Stockbridge appears to be the fishing capital of Hampshire as well, because the River Test flows through the village, or I should say it's actually a town, but it's a very small town.
Yeah.
It's not just one river as such. Mm. There is a congregation of rivers and streams all heading in the same direction. So it's a kind of river valley.
Interesting.
And most of the river frontage, if you want to say, or the access to the river is actually private, and it's exclusively for fishing.
Oh, interesting.
And notably, there were several, more than two, fishing shops in the town, and they weren't just sort of normal sort of rod and line. They were ones that sold all the appropriate accoutrements, you know, the proper attire, let's say.
Right.
So it's not your normal, I don't know what fishermen normally wear, maybe some waterproofs or something like that.
Who knows?
Wellies, etc. No, this was the full-blown tweedy.
Oh, fancy fishing.
Fancy fishing. So tweedy jackets and deer stalker type.
Oh, so it's like the sort of the hunting equivalent attire, but fishing.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Really weird.
Yes, it was. There was a whole style like you have when you have, as you say, with shooting or with golf or tennis or anything. There's a certain I don't know, attire that's associated with that particular.
It's really interesting,
and there was plenty of that. I didn't know what to make of it. Not really
quite
my sort
experience.
Of thing, because it wasn't just, there were several types of fishing, let's say, because there was there was a lot of fly fishing going on, hence the tweedy jackets.
From what my dad's told me, they think a lot of themselves, the fly fishers of the world.
Yes, I can see that it's most probably quite an elitist sport, to be honest.
It does seem that way.
But and then there were several other types of what can be described as match fishing and so forth. And a lot of the venues, pubs, restaurants and hotels, had a very fishy theme to them. Let's put it that way.
My favourite is spotting all the puns, as many different puns as you can get for fish and chip shops names, like Ernie's Place, but the fish place, not P-L-A-C-E. And there's another one in Kingston, but I can't remember what it was, but it was amazing. Damn, I'm going to have to Google it now. I can't just come out with one.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. So, you'll have your Ernie's Place, which I think might have been in Whitstable or something, and the Codfather in Kingston, which is a personal favourite of mine. Can't think of any others, but there we are.
Yeah, there was lots of, I haven't got a list of them, but there was lots of fishy themed venues, let's say. Notably in one, there was a small memento in the gents' toilets, and we can't necessarily talk about it, but I can show you a picture.
Tasteful, very tasteful. It's fly fishing related. gents' toilets, and I said it was tasteful. See if you can guess. Well, there we are. Well, apart from Stockbridge, anything else?
Yeah, we did a lot of walking. There is a small, I assume it was a branch line that existed and was removed in the 1960s when the Beecham report was delivered, I would imagine. So that would be around 1964. And now it's a sort of bridle way you can walk. But there was evidence of railway sidings and bits and bobs, and there was actually a station halfway down that was somebody's abode.
Interesting.
But it still had all the platforms, and there was an actual, what looked like a Victorian passenger carriage as well.
That's quite fun.
I don't know what they were actually using it for, but it was just parked by the platform, by the old station.
Nice.
But no track anywhere.
Yeah, cool.
Yes, it was nice. The weather held out, a bit chilly, but didn't rain. Very pleasant. So I'm looking forward to more
countryside rambles, maybe.
Yes, exactly. I've just got to get the legs thing. They did.
Were they functioning okay?
Well, we did 12 plus miles, and I haven't walked anywhere near that sort of distance in quite some time, and I really felt it. Certainly that evening and the following day, I distinctly had the feeling that I had exercised.
Shoes working out though?
Yes, very well. That wasn't a problem. And I also had some knee supports just to help old knees while I build up a certain amount of stamina, let's say, for the walking. But I'm getting there.
Nice
just got to keep it up. You can't just go and do something like that once. You've got to sort of follow it up and do something the following week. So hopefully this week I'll do something else. But all in all, very pleasant weekend, somewhere that I was aware of, certainly Stockbridge, the location, but I've never stayed in that particular area, and I'd certainly recommend it. Plenty of nice places to eat, plenty of nice places to walk, and yes, it was very pleasant.
Awesome. I was quite outdoorsy myself as well this weekend, with a broken record of my longest bike ride so far. My previous was 63 miles, I think, which was some of the MOD areas around here. This one was, how far did I go? 71.73 miles, which it was for, it was a charity ride run by Pearson. So I had to cycle from my house to Sheen, do the loop, and then cycle home from Sheen again, which was, it hurt.
Sheen's quite far.
It is. It was about 12 miles there and 12 miles back on top of the however long the route was. But a good day out, if tiring. I think if I look at my Strava statistics, my moving time was 6.5 hours, and I think elapsed time was something more like 9. So yeah, a big day. But it was quite good, met some new people. But what's more interesting was my Sunday evening. Yeah, I think it was my Sunday evening. I decided to grab a roll of Kodak Ektar 100, which was sitting in my drawer, and try out some night photography with the old film camera, which was quite cool. I have an app on my phone, which I'm using as a light meter, because the camera itself will only go to 1 full second for the shutter speed. So you've got to work it out yourself and use the bulb mode to keep the shutter open for however long. But some of the individual exposures took over 7 minutes. So we shall see how any of that works when it comes back. I did what is called bracketing, which is going a stop over and under exposed to try and hopefully broaden your chances of getting something. But yeah, I was just wandering around the town, went to the river, got some shots, and I will let you know, Pete, if they turn out okay.
Was there much illumination or none at all?
So some of the photos won't be that interesting, because I just decided to take pictures of BP and Texaco garages, because that's what we've got around. But, you know, just to practice with that kind of artificial semi-neon-looking light. Because I've got a quite fancy roll of film that I would like to take to London to get some nightlife-y type stuff. But yeah, practicing with that, there was nice orange string lights outside a pub, and the sort of darkest one would be just the light from people's houses on the other side of the river. That was the 7 minute one.
That's a lot of minutes.
It's a lot of
exposing.
Minutes.
I mean, I think a 30 second exposure is a pretty long exposure.
So the film was 100 ISO, 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 ASA, whichever one you want. It's 100. So it's quite low, which is one of the reasons. The other reason I had to do some research on this is a thing called reciprocity. Have you heard of that before?
I've heard of the word. I'm not quite sure exactly what it means.
Apparently, as the gooey, plasticky gubbin that is photographic film becomes less sensitive to light as it's exposed to light. So there's a certain factor that you can use per film stock to calculate actually how long you want to be exposing it when you go longer than, I don't know, 30 seconds. So I did my metering on the app, and it suggested, you might want 4 minutes for this one. Then I put it into the little reciprocity calculator, and it goes, 7 minutes, 39 seconds, please, which is why it took so long. But there we go. I'm excited to see what happens. And I've placed my order for the film processing and scanning from AG Photo Lab, and I'll be sending those off tomorrow. So I might have the scans back sometime next week, I hope.
And was that black and white or colour that you were shooting in?
That was colour. I think black and white of fancy lights in the dark would be less interesting, perhaps. But certainly. We'll see.
Is this the first roll of colour that you've shot with this new camera?
This would be second roll of colour, but first nighttime thing that I've done.
Okay.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see how that all turns out.
I'm very excited. I'm also sending off a couple of rolls with one, taking some photos on a brewery tour, one trip to Brooklyn's Museum, and other bits and pieces, but we'll see. I've also ordered some film for a family trip to the Lake District, which is we're going on Friday. So in fact, we'll have to figure out when we're going to do the podcast next week. I forgot to organise that one with you.
Is that next?
This Thursday I'm going.
This Thursday, this Friday, in the day after tomorrow. And then you're going off to
the Lake District, yes.
And you're there for?
Until Thursday. We could do Friday evening.
Okay. I'm just having a think. Yes, because it is Easter weekend, is it not?
Yes.
And I have been summoned.
You've been summoned. Oh, no.
But I think that is possibly, let me just tell you what it possibly is.
Yeah.
I have been asked if I can stay in Chichester on the Thursday night, which is the 14th, and you will be back.
Driving back on that day.
I was going to say, no problem, you've got great broadband, but you're not going to be there. You're in the Lake District.
Exactly. There is internet, but probably not good at all.
Is this your annual trip to the
Lake
District?
It is the annual trip,
and
yes.
So it was a year since you last went?
A little bit less, because we went in the summer because of all
lockdown.
The cancellations, and we're like, we got to get there while we can.
It just seems to have come around so quickly.
Yeah. So quicker than normal because of, summer to spring, but yes.
Okay.
Indeed.
And the usual family yomps up and down various
Indeed. Always
elevations.
The same ones. We don't really do anything with big hills because we just do lake walks, so they're all really easy. But we've been doing them for 20 years, probably, so we'll keep doing them.
So there's a considerable amount of family nostalgia, let's say.
Indeed, yes. But the Lake District and four rolls of film have been purchased, two black and white, two colour, so I'll let you know how they go, when they go.
Yep.
Anyway, that's kind of it. That was my week, and what's coming up in this week?
Damn fly!
It's landed. Right.
Yeah, and it's got... It's got Jeff Goldblum's head on it. Have you not seen The Fly?
Oh, right, the film. I haven't seen The Fly, but I get the reference.
Help me! I couldn't even do it high enough, bitch. Help me!
Help me! Right, Synthy Mo Sizor news. Do you want to rip into the Nonlinear Labs C15?
Not especially.
No? Well, we're going to do it anyway. There is a Loopop video which you should go and watch because he's a great dude for the synth reviews, but I wanted to go and look on their website just for some information, and I found some funny things to poke fun at. So, the C15, digital synthy boy, big wooden stuffs, and it just sounds like a digital synthesizer. It's not that exciting, but it is 4,000 big ones in whichever currency you can be bothered with. And yes, when they're talking about, this is on their website, when they're talking about the control panel where you would do all your sound design, you've got the panel unit is for detailed parameter control and sound design. Cool. Its haptic layout, don't know why they're using the word haptic there, is based on the principle of muscle memory.
Really?
It's just a grid of exactly the same size button labelled in really tiny text, and none of them protrude more than the others.
I got the gist that the way you operated it was you pressed the appropriate button for the section that you wanted to manipulate, and then you rotated the encoder in the centre. Is that it?
Pretty much. That's all you've got. Buttons and one encoder, which is simple in one way, but it's also really annoying because you can't tweak two parameters at once, and then they're going, ooh, but this is a performance synthesizer! And of course you can map the two giant ribbon controllers to things if you want.
You don't need the buttons, there's an app for it.
Yeah, you can touchscreen it if you really want. It's an odd one.
It's just the price that's I can't get past.
Yeah.
For a digital synth, four big ones.
And it doesn't have any LFOs because they don't want a machine to play it.
What, it's meant to be playable?
Let me read the thing on the from the bump. It says, it is resolutely an instrument to be played by musicians, not machines. Therefore, it does not contain any LFOs or internal sequences. And was originally without MIDI as well. Basically, all their customers went, please, don't be so stupid, put MIDI in it. Why are you being so annoying? And now it has MIDI.
Well, I can certainly put this particular product in the pile of, I just have no interest whatsoever in it.
Speaking of things we have no interest in whatsoever, the Roly Seaboard Rise 2 has a video, and all they've changed is they've made it slightly blue, added USB-C and MIDI. Thrilling. For 1,400 big ones.
I do hope we don't have to demonstrate it in the shop.
Well, if you do, you can let me know how quickly the rubbery surface goes kaput.
It's not just that, it's dealing with Equator as well.
Oh yeah, because you have to have it on a computer. Ugh. Anyway, that's there if you care, but just wait for the Osmos, it'll be way better. So, actual news that we're vaguely interested in. Here's one. I think we've got Synthfest in France at the moment, or has just finished up, or something. There is a large green machine that's been around from an Italian company called FC Pro Audio, and they have a mixer for synthesizers called the Mixthesizer. Which is quite a confusing one to phonate. Mixthesizer. Yeah, it doesn't roll off the tongue. Now, they say it's a live performance mixer. Now, have you seen this yet?
No.
Cool. It's a live performance mixer for synthesizers. Predict for me. If you were to have a live performance mixer for synthesizers, what features would you put on it?
I would have all the channels, or most of them, stereo.
It's not going well so far. Okay, what else?
I can't really think.
I know one that I'd have. Mute switches or buttons.
Yeah, or...
solos, maybe.
Yeah, or momentum switches.
Yeah, like the cool Bafaco ones.
Yeah.
Yep, that would be cool. Also, AFL, PFL type system for previewing stuff. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Guess what isn't on this mixer?
Any of that.
Any of those things.
Yeah.
So here's the big thing.
Okay.
This is the 24-channel Beastie.
That looks expensive.
Yep. We'll finish the thing and then you can place your bets, as we've done a few times before, because that's always fun. So they'll build you one, I think, 8, 16, 24 channels with kind of whatever features you want. But this one, 24 mono channels for some reason. You've got... let's see, is it just one?
They are panable, I hope, those channels.
Yes.
Or at least that's something.
Thankfully. You have one preamplifier. Everything else is line level. You have insert, which is quite nice, and direct outs, also quite nice. But if you were live performing, why would you want direct outs anyway? You have a sub output and two auxiliary sends, which is kind of all right as well. Yeah, and they've got all the level meters on knobs.
Excuse me?
Yeah. You can't panic pull down a fader. You've got to find it and...
oh dear.
This is very strange. I don't understand it at all. I assume, based on people saying, ooh, it looks beefy, it feels heavy, that it's well built, and I'm sure it is, and it probably sounds quite good as well, but live performance mixer for synthesizers, and they've gone and missed every single thing that I would want. Right. So, for the 24-channel version, Pete, what do you reckon on the cha-ching, on the money?
Are these custom-built? And you say they'll build you one. Are they built to order or...?
Built to order, and I think you can have up to four auxiliary sends if you want, as well as any kind of connector you like, mini jack XLR. You can DB25 it. Is it DB25? Yeah, if you want. And actually, you can go 8, 16, 24... 32 or 36. Well, apparently you can have stereo channels.
Right, I'm just going to jump in with a number.
Yes.
£3,000.
For the 36 and all stereo, I wouldn't be surprised, but this 24-channel mono is €2,000.
Okay, I thought I'd go in heavy because invariably I don't quote enough when these things come up. Still.
Yeah, they say if you start with an 8-channel mixer, you can send it back and they'll add more channels if you want, which is kind of cool, I guess. And they're aiming for the highest quality components possible, which is also cool, but I just think they've completely missed the live performance thing. If they don't even have mutes, what are they thinking? Anyway, there we go. That's a thing. Look it up. The Mixthesizer. Another, actually, this is probably going to be one of the first things we've actually talked about software that we're interested in. Universal Audio have released a thing. It is Spark, which are native versions of their plugins instead of being bound to UAD hardware. Pretty interesting.
When you say native?
At the moment, they're only on Mac, but Windows support will be coming. But okay. You can just run them on your CPU like you would any normal plugin.
Yes. Okay. Any news on Luna? In that respect?
Luna, I don't think that's coming over as far as I know at the moment, but the piano from Luna is available on this situation. And our inside man says, if you do get that, put it on an SSD because it's beefy on the samples front.
Yes, I can imagine.
Mm. Do you want the bad news?
Go on.
It's a subscription service.
Typical. How much?
$19.99 a month.
That's a lot of a month.
Mm.
When you have your...
Everything else a month.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, there is a new synthesizer, which seems kind of fine, sort of wavetable-y stuff, as well as virtual analog. That's kind of cool. There's a small selection, but they're going to, I assume, gradually port more things over. I don't know if they're going to do everything, but you get, at the start, Neve 1073 preamp and EQ, UA version of the 1176, actually the collection of those, LA2A collection, the Studer A800 tape recorder, which is quite nice. I like that as a mix bus situation. API Vision channel strip, as well as Opal and the piano, I believe. Now, if you already have the UAD hardware bound versions, you get those for free, which is good. If you've already spent the money on the plugins, you can then run them without the hardware, which is good for the I'm working with a UAD system, but I just brought my laptop somewhere, don't have the hardware with me. Can I play this with a buttload of latency? Yes. So that's kind of cool. Somebody did a good comparison showing the latency, comparing the native and the accelerated versions. So we'll keep an eye on it, because I do like the UA plugins, but subscription's not for me. No, definitely not. Ooh, here's another bit of news from me. I have deployed the Wingy a couple of times, and I have played guitar into it. Did I mention this last week? I can't remember.
You did say something about guitar, but I can't remember if you were planning to play it in there or you had played it in there.
Well, I believe last week I was planning to, and now I have, and it wasn't that interesting. So what I'm going to do next, as I think I mentioned, I need one of those 3.5mm to MIDI dongly-doos. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get one of those, chuck in a sequence from the key step, and then try again and see how we go.
Okay.
That'll be interesting.
So any ModCaf news that's worth mentioning?
Other than the next one is the 20th, but that's all I have for you on that front.
Okie dokie.
Mm. Ooh. I have had permission from the other half and almost interest, actually, in acoustic panels wrapped in nicely pastel-coloured fabrics. So that's going well.
Okay, that sounds...
Yes.
Promising.
Although, when I was trying to explain what they were and how they looked and that they weren't as horrible as those typical foam squares,
yep.
I said, Google acoustic panels and Google images, and she immediately saw, ooh, look at these really arty-farty wooden-looking expensive things. Can't we get those? No.
Well, we can do those. We can make those here.
We could. Not the. She wasn't looking at the cool City Skyline diffuser-looking things,
yep.
Which are cool. Not useful for me, unfortunately, as much as I do like them, but more the Helmholtz resonator style ones with the slits in them or the holes.
We can still do those.
We could still do those. Either way, progress on that front. No progress on the modular case, but I have been assigned a place for it to be, and it can still be moth-like in proportion.
Cool.
Which is good news.
Yes, it is.
I'm also thinking potentially a sliding drawer thing for the frontage so I can put a controller keyboard on there. Otherwise, there'll be nowhere for the key step to live.
I'm sure you'll work it all out.
Sure I will. I'm quite excited. I think, given that I'm aiming for the seated at a bar stool playing ergonomic arrangement, put it that way, I'm thinking the curve might have to be quite vertical and quite shallow, just for ease of reaching everything without leaning over something and putting my back out,
yep.
A la ModCaf tables.
I do have to lean over the moths to get at it.
Mm. I'm thinking maybe the bottom row and the top row are positioned vertically in the same plane, but then the other rows kind of curve back, if you see where I'm getting with that.
Possibly.
It might be quite difficult to make, of course.
You could just make the curve shallower.
Exactly. Yeah, shallow curve is probably best, but definitely curve. It looks so cool. Just thinking, if it has the little moth ears that you've got that you hang patch cables on, I'm just imagining it has two little gooseneck LEDs as well, like a second pair of antennae or whatever. That'd be kind of fun. Anyway, it's all in the distant future and nothing solidified at all, but we'll find out.
Cool.
One day. That'll bring us to the end, and time for a miscellaneous multimedia recommendation. And before I deliver mine, I actually started an Apple TV Plus trial because I forgot Foundation existed. So I've started the first episode, but I want to chew on that. Did you watch it?
Yeah, I did the whole series.
Did you like it? I think you liked it, didn't you?
I did. It left... Well, I won't go into details. Obviously, you still haven't watched it. I'm ready for the second series, which I believe they are in production with at the moment.
Nice. I think I might be only 10 minutes in, but the first thing that caught my eyes, they're on Terminus, and then they show the vault, which is some weird obelisk that people can't get close to, which is not how it was in the book, unless it's some other kind of thing. Either way, we'll see how that develops.
As I haven't read any of the books, I have no idea what is... artistic license from the producers and directors.
Gotcha.
And what is authentic to the book. So
in that case, I'll be able to feedback until about 60% of the way through the first book, because that's as far as I got before I gave up for the seventh time.
I believe when I've seen sort of potted synopsis on YouTube, where people commentate about series, that they have borrowed some characters from the prequels.
Right.
And maybe amalgamated some characters. Mm-hmm. So they've got the essence.
There certainly are a lot of characters, so that would make sense.
I believe it's sometimes simpler to do that when you're doing a TV stroke film production.
Of course. Now, to the recommendations, my three, actually...
Three? It was two
four.
Last week.
It four. Was four. They're all the same kind of thing, really. These are all Abbey Road related. Now, if you don't know Abbey Road, where on earth have you been? But, of course, you would expect that some of the world's best sound engineers live there, and they also have access to some very good orchestras and such. So, three different bands that I know of recently. I haven't dug into this too deeply. Did I say three? I meant four. Four different bands have done versions of their own tunes at Abbey Road with orchestras live, and they're really super cool. So, they span sort of a range of genres, from the pop to the metal, and from the easiest listening, you might want to check out Nothing But Thieves. This is the Impossible orchestral version. You can then go to Biffy Clyro, Space. We then have Don Broco, this was the first one that I heard, the orchestral version of One True Prince, and then Architects, Animals. They've also done, Architects that is, have done Impermanence as well, and they're all amazing, even if you don't know the artist or anything, as you would expect from a top-notch studio. Check them out. They're all on YouTube. Just search Architects, Don Broco, Nothing But Thieves, or Biffy Clyro, Orchestral, and you'll probably find them. They're all on the artists' channels, not an Abbey Road channel. There you go. Pete, what have you got for us?
Right, I have a interesting little channel that dropped into my YouTube queue this week, and I thought it was relevant to our podcast and worth a mention. The channel is entitled Ryan Leach, which is the gentleman's name who hosts the channel, and the description is videos about the craft of writing music for film, TV, and video games.
Ooh, nice.
So, there are a reasonable amount of videos present on this channel, and they tend to dive into relatively esoteric elements of music composition. But those who are looking to possibly improve their technique in music writing may find these videos interesting. Some of the videos are entitled things such as Writing Transitions is Fun, brackets, no really. How to Train Your Bass Section. The Woodwinds in Harry Potter's Musical are Wicked.
That's true, definitely.
Why You Feel Nostalgic for the angsty chord.
The angsty chord. Interesting.
So they've got pictures of various sort of angsty type artists. Radiohead and
angsty. Yeah,
yeah, angsty. I got it. Let's have a look and see what else they've got. How music expresses ideas. How to write epic cinematic strings.
Awesome.
And so forth. And these go on and on. There's a good 50 plus, maybe 100 videos. I haven't counted them.
Not bad at all.
So
sounds good.
That is my this week's multimedia recommendation. The YouTube channel Ryan Leach. That's spelled R-Y-A-N and then L-E-A-C-H.
Perfecto. Thank you, as always, you wonderful denizens of our audience, for tuning in, and we hope to catch you in episode 19. Farewell.
19?
119. We've suddenly lost 100 episodes. We hope to catch you in episode 119. Farewell.